Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Switzerland! The U.S. go up! What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra!
Boyd will try a long hit! What a goal from Boyd! This is spectacular! It's hit with no regard for humanity! Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri have scored in the 90th minute! That was worth the price of admission alone!
This is Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome into Soccer Matters. Tonight we have a big one here as we continue our best of series. Thank you for tuning in. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock. Show is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, 713, call now. Let's get in to the soccer talk.
Last week, had an opportunity to interview one of the greatest legendary center backs for the U.S. Women's National Team ever, Becky Sauerbrunn from St. Louis, Missouri. I thought this was a great interview because I think there's a lot here to be gleaned for youth players and beyond, quite frankly. So, we're going to re-air it. It is Becky Sauerbrunn, who recently retired from the U.S. Women's National Team. Becky, thank you so much for coming on to our show.
Of course. Happy to be here.
All right. So let's first I want to talk to you because I have a lot of friends and ex-teammates from St. Louis. Such a great soccer city. Talk a little bit about growing up there. I know you played a lot of soccer and indoor against a lot of ex-pros and college guys. Just take us through the upbringing in St. Louis.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of cities say that they are Soccer City USA. I really think St. Louis has got the right to say that they are Soccer City USA. And I think just because of the history of the city and the players that have come through it and the leagues that have started, you know, way back in the 1800s. And so I feel like I was very fortunate to get to grow up through St. Louis just because of the quality of coaching that I had. I played for JB Marine Soccer Club. I had some great coaches to still to this day are some of my good friends and mentors. And indoor soccer was really popular. You know, there was the Ambush, there was the Steamers. And so I would go on the weekends with some of my club teammates and watch games and getting to watch Mizzou women's soccer or SLU. Like there were options for me to go and watch soccer, which I think at the time was pretty rare. And so I think it just fostered a love for the game from such a young age.
And St. Louis to me was always, it always seemed like everybody was rowing kind of in the same direction as much as possible, kind of like a Seattle, like there was this sense of pride that goes way back, as you said.
Yeah, you definitely get that feeling. And I think that has continued on. You know, it's rare for St. Louis people to leave St. Louis. I was one of the rare people that kind of flew the coop to go to college. But yeah, there is a real sense of pride when it comes to St. Louis, especially when there is a St. Louis product that is on a national team or a youth national team or playing professionally.
All right. So I hear this. You're uncomfortable talking about yourself. I've seen some of your interviews in the past. I have had you on my show, I think many years ago. But, you know, you do carry yourself in a very humble way. I also think that's part of the reason why people zone in on you, because there is a sense of humility, composure, reading of the game that comes along with the way you look at the game. Did you have the personality initially to be a center back?
It's funny because I don't think my profile of player fit what a stereotypical center back was. And it wasn't until, you know, I was 16, 17, when I was getting recruited for college, that I think like the shift in the game started happening when it came to, oh, we actually want center backs to be able to set play, and they don't need to be the biggest and the fastest and the strongest. Sometimes they just need to use their brain and find the angles and can play the short range game. And so I didn't initially have that personality or that player profile. And I think it was more of a slow burn. And I think when coaches got to work with me for longer than, you know, one or two camps, I think they started to appreciate my game a little bit more. And now you look at the game and you look at these center backs, and some of them are, you know, main playmakers.
Yeah, the additional responsibility now, it's not just seek and destroy and give the ball to somebody who's a skilled player anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, I look at it and I'm like, wow, it's got a lot longer list in the job description nowadays. As we go on here, just the work ethic you have is legendary. And I was talking to your college coach, Steve Swanson, and he just spoke about your work ethic, the additional things that you did. How much is the makeup of a player about a coach, the coaching, the mentorship, and then how much of it is just about sheer will and desire?
Oh, man, it's such a combination. And I've never thought of myself as a supremely talented player. I was someone that felt that if I could train it, I could improve upon it. And so I needed guidance. I needed someone that could look at my game like a Steve Swanson and kind of break it down and say, hey, these are the things you're good at. These are the things that are a little bit of a gap in your game. Let's make sure that those strengths we keep strengthening, but those weaknesses we find ways to either improve upon or to hide a little bit.
How about the reading of the game? I mean, that's something everybody says. It flows off our tongues very easily. But, you know, I just remember calling national team games that you were in, and all of a sudden you'd see a tempo lift, an opposing team in a really good attacking posture, and then all of a sudden this Becky Sauerbrunn would come in there, cut a pass out, and it was like throwing water on a match. That attack was gone. You know, explain to me your reading of the game, how you can practice that even maybe as a center back.
That is so much of watching film. And it's something that I think is becoming more and more important. I think you see a lot of data and analytics and breaking down the game. I think watching yourself make decisions based off the space you're in, the players that are around you, what's the space that looks dangerous? How can you negate any of that dangerous space? That's all things that you can see. And when you see it, it becomes easier when it's happening in real life and you can make those game time decisions. And I'm so fortunate because I did have coaching staffs that really enjoyed film, that would break down film, not even of just myself, but I would watch with Steve Swanson, the Italian men's national team backline, and how they would break down a play, or how they run the line and just, it would be an offside trap, or they would step here, drop here. And then the forward would have to react off the dropping or the stepping of the line. And it would just break their momentum. And so just these little things that are really subtle that a lot of people maybe don't see initially, you can see through film. And so I'm just a huge proponent. If you want to get better, watch film.
And then the decisions you have to make as a center back, I mean, your measurement has to be, you have to know you're going to win a tackle if you're the last person, you know? I mean, that you don't have a lot of margin for error.
Yeah, no, you really don't. And it's as a goalkeeper, as a back line, as you move your way up the field, you know, you have a little more room to make the wrong decision. But if you're in that back line or the goalkeeper position, like so much of your job, it's just making the right decision at the right time, or reacting off someone's mistake and not making the next mistake. Because I really think a goal happens when two mistakes happen right back to back. And so just being able to recognize what's happening and being like, that's not right, I'm going to have to change my decision now to do the right decision. But yeah, I mean, that's why I feel like you don't have to be an overly physical player. I think it's helpful if you've got the speed and the strength. And I think, of course, that's very helpful to have. But if you know the angles and if you know the decisions, I think that can really negate any weaknesses you have in that physicality.
Well, if you're a young player, this is a wonderful thing to hear. We're talking to Becky Sauerbrunn, over 200 caps for the U.S. All right, after all, this is a World Cup show, so I got to shift you into your World Cups, and you've played in a number of them. Just describe the magic of the first time you played in a World Cup.
Oh, the magic. That was 2011 Women's World Cup in Germany. I had just made the team, you know, maybe a few months before, so I was relatively new, did not have a lot of caps, was not expected to play. I was very... you know, very strictly told, like, we're not expecting you to get any minutes. We just want you to push the other center backs, make sure that they're at their best. Just be a good teammate. And I'm like, I got it. I can do that. I can fill that role. And then one of the center backs got a red card in the quarterfinal against Brazil. And so I got the nod to start. And my first game ever in a World Cup was a semifinal against France. And it was the most scary but most awesome thing that I ever got to experience. I think my family probably were in a worse place than I was as far as nerves, but it was just like such a great game. And it was the first time that I ever got to test myself at that level. And up until that point, I didn't know if I had it, if I had whatever it took to be a national team player, to play on the U.S. Women's National Team. And after that game, it was kind of that first affirmation that, okay, I can be here. I belong here. And we won the game. And then we wound up losing in the final, unfortunately. But it was one of those, you know, inflection moments for me in my career where I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to dedicate myself to.
Becky, before we let you go, I want to ask you this one or two quick ones here. Some of the most difficult international strikers you played against in the World Cup, who would you come up with?
Oh, Eugenie Le Sommer from France. I mean, she has embarrassed me on several occasions. Anya Mittag, Germany. Alexandra Popp, also German. You got to go with Cristiani and Marta from Brazil. I mean, they were, I mean, Marta is still kicking around. She's great. From Sweden, Stina Blackstenius, who with Arsenal just recently in the championship of Champions League, just completely like ran down a ball, scored a goal. And it was so reminiscent of her doing that to me. I was like, I feel so bad for the center back. She did it again during the Euros. So she's a player that kind of like haunts my dreams to this day. But those are a few where these are like quality, great international forwards.
Yeah, great names you brought up. By the way, that didn't happen to you very much. Last one, World Cup 2026 on the men's side. And then we got the women's in 2027. But the men's side, it's the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. We have seven games here in Houston. What do you think that does for just the game overall in America, both men and women's?
Oh, I think you look at what happened after the 94 Men's World Cup and, you know, how the MLS started to like really flourish after that point, just the eyes that came to the game. I equate that to the 1999 Women's World Cup and how that was such a huge inflection point, how those women, you know, basically used the momentum and support to start professional soccer in the U.S. And so I think it's just such a wonderful opportunity to bring the sometimes fan into that spectrum of being like a hardcore fan. But I also think that we are just, you know, a country full of immigrants and people from all these different soccer loving cultures. And so just to have this thing that will bring us all together, especially in this moment in time when things in society are just not good and it's so divisive, to have something that'll bring us together and give everyone a sense of belonging, I think is really important too.
All right, let's take a break here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. The break brought to you by our great friends down at Lamont Brands, lamontbrands.com. All your printing needs down there. They do the Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats. It is lamontbrands.com. Also, my great friend Dimitri, the best in Greek food. It's Nico Nico's Greek and American Cafe. Three locations in Houston, I-10 in the Beltway, the Woodlands, and then, of course, the original in Montrose, which is the one I frequent. They've got it all. Gyros, souvlaki. You name it, seasonal bests. It is Nico Nico's Greek and American Cafe. Also get in there and get some Christmas gifts for people because it is the holiday season and the gift of giving is apparent and alive at Nico Nico's Greek and American Cafe. Take a break. We got more to come. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm.
ESPN 97.5.
Listening to the best of Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
Presented by Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com.
All right, let's take two segments here and maybe three. And let's go back to the Dynamo press conference that just occurred. And we'll start it off here. Interviewed. So here's the first thing. The owner, Ted Siegel, came in town to do the presser. Tim Howard, who's a minority owner, came in town. What was strange to me was the president of the club, Jessica O'Neill, was off to the side, who is running the club on a daily basis. And she did not at all get up in front of the podcasters and press that were there to handle any questions. So it's kind of strange to me that the two people that are far removed from it are the ones doing all the talking. I mean, it's good that they talked. I'm not sure what I got out of it. Now we're going to see what you got out of it. Let's start off with Ted Siegel making Shell Energy Stadium a 365-day building.
I think the focus of a lot of what we're doing here is to make this a building that's a 365-day-a-year building, that it's not just for approximately 40 soccer matches for the Dynamo and Dash, but for us to host more international friendlies. As you can see with the goalposts behind me here, we're home to Texas Southern football this year to Sam Houston State. We'll be hosting the Gamblers next year to create more concert events. We're going to be match day minus one home for visiting World Cup teams next summer. And as well as our smaller spaces that aren't field involved, but within some of our other clubs and spaces for our fans and partners to experience Shell Energy Stadium. Of course, I'm fully aware that the expenditure for our infrastructure is just one part of creating a fan-friendly experience. It's also delivering for our fans a soccer product that they can be proud of and come out to support. We know there are no guarantees in any given season that you're going to succeed no matter how you compose your roster. I recognize that this year did not live up to our expectations on the Dynamo or Dash side. And so this work that we're doing on the infrastructure side is not to the exclusion of further and increased investment on the Dynamo and Dash rosters. So we're hard at work, given that we have an unfortunately long off season, working with Pat on the Dynamo and Angela on the Dash, even though the Dash have one more match left, but eliminated from playoff contention. To make plans to build a stronger club for the Dynamo and Dash in 2026. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Okay, so 365 a day building means you want to have more events in there, and it's not just soccer. Isn't the Gamblers playing in there too?
Yeah, he mentioned that in the club.
Did he mention? Okay, the Gamblers are playing there too. So, okay, there you go on that. What does that mean? That means it's like if you own an indoor soccer facility in Houston. You make money by having people in the building playing, right? So that's the way that's going to work. Now, here's Ted Siegel, and this is a little bit of a poke, I think, on the prior ownership of Gabriel Brenner. And here's Ted Siegel on what was inherited.
I'll just go back and remind our folks that before we had the mesh seats, the stadium we inherited had heavily damaged sun-bleached, hot plastic in the summertime, no cup holder, no armrest seats. And so it's basic table stakes to give you a comfortable experience, and I think it's been well-received. Again, that goes in tandem with our investment on the on-field product, but describing what our past was and what we inherited was just not acceptable.
Okay, so stadium. So now the stadium, which was state-of-the-art at one time, or exciting and new, he's trying to keep up with the infrastructure of it on what was inherited and seats and all that. I go back to the initial how you could build a bowl in Houston, Texas without opening up the four corners of the stadium for airflow. I don't know, but that happened. Ted Siegel now on bringing in impact players.
I'm not going to identify a particular individual player. We do have a focus on bringing in high impact players, and as we've seen, and one great takeaway from this season has been the development of a number of our young players, and so the progress and development of Jack McGlynn, who was a significant acquisition for our club, the development of Brooklyn Reigns, the development of Felipe Andrade, and the return. And our high investment player, Lawrence Sonali.
Okay, that's all well and good, and you got to pick out some of the good things that happened in the season. The health of Sonali was good. Jack McGlynn is a nice talent. He could end up going to the World Cup. We know that. And then he added in Brooklyn Reigns. Brooklyn Reigns, I think, was a great story because we all watched him mature and grow as a soccer player. But you didn't make the playoffs in a league with 18 teams, okay? So this is the time where you have to point out the positive. Here's what we do off the field, all that. To me, it's a little bit nebulous because this was a bad season. And the reason it's a bad season for me, I know teams have off years, clubs have off years based on roster build, making mistakes, whatever. But when you talk about the investment the Houston Dynamo made in Hector Herrera, and I've said this on the show over and over, $6 million, and you make the playoffs 2 years, and in year three you don't make the playoffs, you definitely have a downgrade in quality of players. You don't replace players with equal or better quality. Everybody saw this coming, and I get it. There's a lot of things behind the scenes that we don't get. But what I will say is you didn't get enough value out of Hector Herrera. You didn't get enough value out of changing and building an area for fans to watch the game, the club and all that. You didn't get any value. We're still in the same place. We're treading water. Just because you made the playoffs 2 years in a row, people have already forgotten about that. And that's the thing that I don't see an ascension. I just see us stuck. And I credit the team for making the playoffs. But when Hector Herrera leaves, you can't believe you're going to continue on an upward trend. And by the way, the attendance didn't get much better with him. He wasn't marketed well. Why didn't we take this $6 million gem and get him out there and get our money's worth out of the guy? And I'm not talking about throwing a baseball out at the Astros game. I'm talking about taking him into the communities that you can influence to come to your games. And again, I don't think this is a front office working in conjunction with the competitive side of the team. I just don't see it. And when fans are here in Houston and they see the owner buy a building and they see Vancouver sign Thomas Muller and all of a sudden a dead dormant franchise who doesn't draw anybody to BC Place all of a sudden explodes and this guy is doing more for every game he plays. He's doing 10 appearances and he's having fun. He's showing up at all kinds of different games. He is a funny guy. He's an incredible fit on and off the field. They did a great contract with him where they're not paying him a lot this year. And then he will get paid on the back end, but he's delivering. We got to find a player like that. And we can't sit here and always accept, oh, we just, you know, we can do it other ways or we can do it like San Diego. Yes, you can. But we need something here to wrap our arms around. That's why I put out the thing, Jaimes Rodriguez, yes or no. Because I wanted to get a gauge on, is it important for a star to be here? And there's a lot of mixed on that. But there's also a lot, we need something to get the wheels in motion, to bring some juice back here, some energy, some excitement. We need a face of the franchise that can get people energized and pumped. I'm just tired of sitting here and talking to my friends. Why doesn't it work in Houston? How'd you guys get the World Cup? MLS isn't working. Well, you know, at some point we got to throw our arms up and say, who's accountable for it not working here? Our stadium, that's great if we have new seats. But if nobody's sitting in them, it's money lost from a business perspective. That's parking, that's concessions, that's a hat or a jersey that a son wants. I look at every empty seat and I go, that's lost revenue. I don't know if that's okay or not. I don't know. Has the club been shamed in a healthy way? I don't know. Is the competitive side talking to the front office and the president of the club saying, hey, we need more marketing? Now, I do see the Dynamo getting a little bit more out there now. I mean, I don't know. I try to do it with the radio show. I invite people every time. I say it's an open door. Send me a female player. Send me a male player. Send me a Dynamo player. Send me a Dash player. There's just a lot that needs to happen. Investment in seats is good. Are we investing in the best front office talent? This is not to be disrespectful to anybody. I want to make that clear. Why haven't we gone and stolen one of the best executives from another team in the league? Or why haven't we mined some of the people in Houston who have institutional knowledge? Why? Are we going low on the scale for front office talent? All due respect, I'm not trying to, but come on, we don't have a Garth Lagerwey. We don't have those types of people in our front office here. I don't feel the passion of soccer. I really don't. And that's why it bothers me. And I'm sorry, I'm allowed to say what I want to say because I've been here since 1984 and I've seen the sport grow miraculously to the point where we're hosting a World Cup. And our MLS product is not keeping up with the standard of the excitement, the diversity, the energy, and the amount of people that love soccer here in Houston. That's 2 million proper. There's data on that. Listen tomorrow night to Destination 2026 because we're going to talk a lot about that. Okay, so here is the – now this is the multiple ways to win in the league. So this is in a way just toning down the you have to have a big star. Here's Ted Siegel on that.
There are multiple ways that you can win in this league. I think that we have and will continue to take a hybrid approach about developing players as well as acquiring the right high-impact players from the outside.
Okay. Developing players. But nobody's coming through from the academy. No Houston kids. That's community. You get Houston kids through to the first team. This is community. You get Houston people in the front office in visionary positions. This is community. Right? So no academy kids are coming through. Now, Mr. Siegel went on, Ted went on to cite Mikael. That doesn't count. He's coming from South America. He's dropped into the two team to transition into the first team. That's nice use of Dynamo too, but that's not developing your own to the Philadelphia Union model. Okay. It's not developing your own. It's mind numbing to me that in this city that has produced players for so many others, college level, professional level, that we are not producing anything from the academy. Now, I'm not down there. I don't know what it is. I would love to talk to people about it. 713-780-3776 if you want to come in. Here's Ted Siegel, Dynamo owner, on bringing a DP and a roster.
We know that we have potentially two DP slots available, depending on how we structure our roster. We have full intent to bring on a DP. The strategy around, and this Pat can speak better to, about the particular window in the 26 season around where we bring in a DP, or if we bring in one in each, Pat can speak to a little bit better, but it's all going into our roster composition discussions.
Okay, so here's the DP thing now. So you got to drop the word DP at this point because you got to keep the fans excited. So our DPs currently are Ezequiel Ponce and Andre Linger. Are they good enough for you, Dynamo fans? Have they done enough? They're obviously good soccer players, both of them. Linger and Ponce. But are they game changers? They're definitely not Son. They're definitely not Muller. They're definitely not the left-footed midfielder out in San Diego. They're not Chucky Lozano. Chucky Lozano would put people in the seats here. Who would you bring here? So, again, you're going to get a lot of change on this roster, and you got to find, one more time, You got to find people that can win you games. That can win you games. That can be the difference. That can, this is the real hot word right now from all of us in the world of soccer. Moments. Moments where you can win a game. All right, going to take a break. Let's see. We want to talk a little bit about Slip Sliders here. You go down there. Slip Sliders is down on Bins near Herman Park. So if you're going to the museums, you go to Slip Sliders. The best sliders going. They're fresh. They're all made fresh. They're made to order. They've got the Shrimp Shack, my favorite. They've got beef, chicken, every kind. I like the Caribbean chick also. They've got milkshakes that are exceptional. Onion rings, chicken fingers. But I would go there strictly for the sliders. Brian has had them. He liked them, right? You like the Slip
Sliders.
Yeah,
the Shrimp Shack in particular, the one you said your favorite was great. That's why I had a,
I'm glad you joined forces with me on this.
Yeah, no, that was my favorite. I also liked, I know they have multiple beef options, but it was like a classic burger slider, but it was also very good.
So were there, I think that's the backyard.
I can't, yeah, I think they have multiples, but either way, it was great. And so were the chicken tenders.
There's one beef one that has Swiss cheese and mushrooms.
It wasn't that one.
But that one's killer. I've had that one. All right, Slip Sliders down on Bins. Let's take a break. Let's come back. More Ted Siegel. Then we're going to get into Tim Howard. This is interesting. One more time, we're going to celebrate. Oh, yeah. All right. Don't stop the dancing. One more time, we're going to celebrate. Oh, yeah. Don't stop the dancing. One
more. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to the best of Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
Presented by Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com.
By the way, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Soc, at Soccer Matters GD. Also on our YouTube channel, Soccer Matters, Facebook Soccer Matters. The engagement is important for this radio show. Number one, I like to hear your opinions. 713-780-3776. But I also, you know, I like the questions, the feedback, all of that stuff, because essentially you're my co-hosts out there. All right. So if you got anything to say here on the Ted Siegel and Tim Howard stuff right now, 713-780-3776. All right. Let's go to Ted Siegel. Now, we had heard that there was a time where there was a Chinese investor, a 24-year-old kid, the son of a guy that was in jail, I think, and had ties to the Communist Party. His father was in jail. According to Sportico, the Dash were valued at $70 million. I'd love to see how they come up with the valuation, but that's what they were valued at. And this Chinese investor was willing to pay $120 million. And I'm like, okay, what does he know that we don't know? And why does he want to pay above and beyond like that? But it was being reviewed by the NWSL. So I don't know what happened, but here's Ted Siegel, and he basically refutes that there's any discussions to sell. At that time, he was interested in the deal, but here's Ted Siegel, soundbite 7.
I'm not in active discussions with anybody to sell the Dash at this moment in time. You'll be hearing from Tim, who's my partner in the Dynamo and the Dash, momentarily. And so there's, I always welcome the opportunity to bring on additional partners, but at this time there's no active discussions with anyone for a sale of the Dash.
Can you repeat
At this time, there's no active discussions to sell the Dash with any party.
So there you go. Boy, that's a sleeping giant. I mean, the amount of women playing soccer here. I rode back on the plane from the ACC Championship after calling that for ESPNU. And later on tonight, we'll have Casey White on, who was my analyst. We're going to talk women's soccer in the final segment of the show. So all you women's soccer fans out there, like me, stick around. That'll be fun. We'll also have Eric Goodman from the Verde Report in Austin. We'll talk some MLS with him. But I rode back on the plane with one of the players who was an exceptional player who played at Albion Hurricanes here, Leah Klenke, and her parents were next to me. They had all the Notre Dame garb on. They were very, very nice. Daughter's a very good player. And Yeah, she's going to end up being a pro, in my opinion. She made the all-conference ACC team in the tournament. But the connection to the sport here, I just don't know how an owner outside a market, Tim Howard, who comes here twice, they can't understand what's going on down here. They really can't. That means you have to rely on other people, right? I'm not saying it can't work, but you have to rely on other people. I just don't see it in the makeup and the roster of the front office and overall in this club. I think in some cases I see it, but not all. And again, not trying to be rude here at all. I'm trying to do real soccer talk here in Houston, which we need more of, because it can't be one guy doing it. That's another thing. Where is our media here? Are the Dynamo doing things to try and groom the media other than say, hey, please say something nice about this? We want people to talk about the game. We want some healthy pressure. It's never going to change without it. Here's Ted Siegel on Pat Onstad, the director of soccer operations, the president, Asher Mendelson, and Ben Olson.
I have a high degree of confidence, but there is collective awareness from Pat and Asher and Ben that none of us want to see a repeat of the 25 season. There are certain circumstances that are outside of our control, some that we can control. And so, yes, we sold Mikael, but we didn't have the appropriate plan to replace him in the short amount of time that we had. On the other hand, we had a stalwart mate for him in Eric Svechenko, and you can't predict when somebody can stay healthy. Unfortunately, he didn't stay healthy for the majority of the season, and so a lot of our lapses were the result of a interchanging back line that we found difficult to solve until the very end of the season. We know that there's priorities as to where on the field, including there, to bolster our talent. And we're going to address it, but none of us wish the same result for next season, and we're going to do what we can to control it for 26, recognizing the importance of it for our club.
All right. With all due respect, every team battles through injuries, some more than others. You know, I mean, that's kind of putting lipstick on it a little bit. There was some honesty in there with, you know, they weren't prepared. But we all saw that from outside. We were like, wait a second. You're going to lose Coco Karaski and Hector Herrera, two guys vital to your possession game. You're playing a narrow game with inverted wingers, and two of your best possession players who can get out of pressure are leaving the team. How can you even expect to think you're going to be as good a possession team? And the Dynamo weren't as good a possession team this year. And by the way, you saw the influence those two guys had on the other players on the team. You have to get influential players at that level to make the Bossies better, the Kovalchuks better, and everyone else. And, I mean, this was a very vivid and clear example of that. Again, not trying to be Mr. Know-it-all here either, okay? All right, now let's go on to Tim Howard. Now, this is something. Let's talk to Tim Howard. Here's Tim Howard, number 10 on the season.
The one thing I am happy about from this season, and what doesn't really get seen from the outside.
Okay, stop there. Okay, doesn't get seen from the outside. Tim, with all due respect, the outside is smarter than you may think. And the outside is on this. And now you can let the soundbite go on.
And what doesn't really get seen from the outside, because it is about wins and losses. We don't mix our words.
Stop it again.
But what you find in
okay. So yes, it is about wins and losses, Tim, but it is also about relevancy and growing a fan base and exposing more to the product and inviting the whole community to be involved in the sport of soccer and to come and have connection, find their heroes on the field with the Houston Dynamo and Houston Dash. So if we make the playoffs, let's say the Dynamo make the playoffs next year, and the attendance doesn't move, the relevancy doesn't move, we're not engaging more people after a World Cup, what's the point then? Isn't the end game a full stadium? Like Cincinnati? I mean, where is the bar here? Is the bar so low now here in Houston that we're happy to have a half-filled stadium? And are people getting conditioned to accept that? By the way, if you're out there listening, I'd love to hear from you. 713-780-3776. Okay. Is there more to that soundbite? Okay, let it go.
Mix our words there. But what you find in really difficult seasons is that some players come to the
Enough of that soundbite. Some players come good. No kidding. Every season there's a shining light somewhere, and then you can find it, okay? So that's not what I wanted to hear. All right. Now, Tim says it's not smoke and mirrors. I don't know why he says it's smoke and mirrors unless somebody said it's smoke and mirrors. Why would you even bring that up? Here's Tim Howard on it's not smoke and mirrors.
When you own and run a sports franchise, it's all encompassing. Everything matters. When we are fans of a team, we just kind of see the wins and losses. This is important.
No, we don't just see the wins and losses, Tim.
The structural changes, the match day experience is important. Yes, of course, the on-field product is important too. But there isn't this concept where we put one on hold and then we take care of the other. This is just ever evolving constantly, and it has to be. So as we're making changes to the stadium, we're making changes to the roster. Like that those things go hand in hand. So this isn't a smoke and mirrors game. There are some things that need to be addressed around the stadium. It's things that need to be addressed on the field, and those things, particularly now that it's the off season, have been accelerated.
It's not smoke and mirrors. Why would you even say that? Unless somebody said it to you. This is not knowing the room. This is not knowing that there's a lot of educated people here in Houston. A lot of those educated fans don't go to the games because of this kind of talk over and over. And with all due respect to Tim, he has no context of Houston. He can say he does. I think I saw somebody write, well, he's been here twice. Yeah. I don't know what he's investing in the team. He's definitely not investing a lot of time showing up here. I don't know what he's telling Pat Onstad or Ben Olson. I don't know what he's telling Ted Siegel. He doesn't know the Houston soccer market. Just because you played at Everton and were a great goalkeeper doesn't mean you know Houston. I don't want to hear about Everton. I want to hear about the Houston Dynamo and what you're doing. And to sit there and tell us that it's all encompassing, come on. Are we peasants here being spoken down to? Come on. That's so wrong, honestly. It's so wrong. And it's just an example of you have not done your homework, my friend. You have not gone through the history of this club and seen what has happened over the last 10 years. And you didn't take the time to try and figure out what's going on over the last 10 years. And because you have a few friends in pro soccer here doesn't mean you know Houston, Texas. All right, so here's 12. Tim Howard on how he sees Houston.
In a perfect world, as we strive to continue to push this club forward, I would love to see many cultures, because I know there's many, many cultures represented in the city of Houston, come together, march to the game, be at different bars, be in the stadium, all shapes and colors. And I, that's the match day experience that I yearn for. Because I think that's what's on offer. Not just the game being global, but Houston. That's who Houston is to me. This multicultural, multifaceted. Yeah. So I think that's what I, having lived the match day experience in Europe, and it's different sometimes. It's so easy to say that. But having lived that in Europe, I would love to have elements of that here in Houston. I think we do. But again, it's a commitment from the club. It's a commitment from the community. It's a share thing. And I talk about it often when I come to Houston. Like sometimes I feel like from a fan experience, it's oftentimes what the club isn't doing versus what the club should be doing. It's just collaborative. At the end of the day, if we're not all in the same boat, rowing the same way, then, you know, we're it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And so, again, and Ted has talked about this. That's part of it, listening to our supporters. What are the issues? If you've got 10 issues, maybe we don't get to all 10, but we got to prioritize which ones we get to because it's important to them.
That's a word salad.
That's what you call a word salad and not being prepared to come talk to people here. Now, we don't have a difficult press in Houston. That's pretty obvious. Our press is not very difficult. That's Tim tap dancing and telling us a lot of things we already know and stating the obvious. That is called waffling. That is called dodging and feinting, because that's a lot of words with no answers. So if you want to have this massive walk to the stadium and you want it to be like Everton, first of all, we're not Europe. We're Houston, Texas. So there's those challenges. But tell us how you're going to do that. See, this is what we didn't get in this press conference. We didn't get somebody. How are we going to change attendance? How are we going to have this march? See, if there was somebody really there right on top of it, they would have said, hey, Tim, yeah, we get that. We'd like to have a march, but how do we accomplish that? And then we get the word collaborative in there and all these keynote words. Honestly, I'm not trying to be – nobody's ever going to do this type of talk about the Houston Dynamo in Houston. Nobody. And if we don't ever do this talk, it's never going to change. And this was verbal gymnastics, quite frankly. Verbal gymnastics. He didn't own the moment. He's just trying to get through the moment. And to me, that's not fair to our soccer community. And that's not going to help us turn it around. And we're going to get more Tim Howard sound bites coming up. He talks about designated players, etc. So we got a couple more sound bites from him. I got more news. By the way, we got a lot of World Cup stuff. A lot of excitement here. By the way, match day 5 and 6, this is going to really determine who's qualifying. And then December 5th, this is when we get the it's the draw in Washington, D.C. Maybe I'll go to the draw. Thinking about that. This is a unique World Cup. It's the first World Cup with 48 teams. First World Cup hosted by three nations, U.S., Mexico, and Canada. 16 cities across North America will host. 12 groups of four, top two teams from each group, and eight best third-place teams will go into, listen carefully, a round of 32. That's when the elimination begins. The opener, June 11th, Azteca Stadium in Mexico City. The final at MetLife. This could surpass 6 million fans at the end of this tournament. That's a lot of people. All right, this is Run DMC. It's called Rock Box. All right, we'll take a break. Coming back with more. Big shout out to our friends, Lone Star Sports and Entertainment. Also, condolences to David Fletcher, the head over there. David lost his mother. Very sad to hear that. So condolences to David Fletcher over at Lone Star Sports and Entertainment. Let's come back. More talk here at Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm.
ESPN 97.5. Soccer Matters. Quick shot score! The U.S. with Dempsey!
Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid.
Soccer Matters.
On ESPN 97.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right. Hour number two. When I hear those goal calls, I get pumped. World Cup 2026 coming to Houston, Texas. 7 games at Energy Stadium. 5 group stage. 2 elimination matches. Wow. Can you believe it? Organically, what it can do to Houston and soccer. Just the fact that it's here in the future. All right. Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. Get a car, boat, motorcycle accident. It's John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, 713, call now. So nobody wants to get in these accidents, but you do need representation. By the way, there are going to be people who need representation during the World Cup when 500,000 to 750,000 people come here to Houston, Texas. All right, let's continue on here. Again, big shout out to our friends at Slip Sliders down near Memorial Park. Herman Park. They're on Bins. Great day as you go to the zoo, you go to the museums, you pop into Slip Sliders. It's a really cool place. They got outdoor seating there as well. Super clean, fresh ingredients, made to order sliders. I mean, they must have like 20 to 25 different sliders on there. As Brian mentioned, my favorite is the Shrimp Shack. But chicken, beef, you name it, they have it. And I think during the World Cup, they're going to come up with some good ones when we know what teams are coming here to Houston. So Slip Sliders down on Bins. Get over there for the best in sliders. And they got all the traditional ones, too. If you like the traditional, just a good beef slider, man, they got it. You want a good fried chicken slider, they got it. The brioche buns are great as well. It's Slip Sliders. Okay. Let's continue on with Tim Howard here from the press conference. Soundbite number 12, how he sees Houston.
In a perfect world, as we strive to continue to push this club forward, I would love to see many cultures, because I know there's many cultures
represented.
Oh, I
think we played this one already. All right, so let's stop that one. We already got the diversity thing. That's an easy one. We all know that. We've known that forever. This is an incredible soccer city. That's why we got the World Cup. We have people from every country and corner of the globe here, pretty much. They are passionate about soccer. They're 2 million strong. They are having watch parties. They are doing a lot of things around the sport of soccer and have yet to come to the Houston Dynamo table. They are all what you call unique fans. They are all what you call potentials. But unless you go out there and decide to mine them and go out there with an olive branch, you're not going to get them. And I don't see enough going after the authentic fan in Houston. And authentic fans, you have to market and promote to a little bit different. That's for sure. And a lot of that means connecting with their culture. You could have a Honduran night at the stadium. You could have an El Salvadorian night at the stadium. They pack the stadium all the time. There's so many really cool, innovative things you could do. So many. But it's not going to happen by doing social media and sitting back and hoping people come. Now, if we're waiting all year long to get a playoff game and sell more tickets, that's not the way I want it to be. I want it to be a packed house from day one, start of the season. Let's have a party. Let's have a fiesta. Let's do it. You know, day one. I don't want to wait. If other teams can do this in MLS, why can't we? That's the question I'm going to ask. Why is the bar lower here? We need a raising of the bar, and that takes a little bit of risk from those in the positions of power. All right. I don't know what soundbite 13, 1994 catalyst.
1994 was the catalyst for soccer in this country. Forget what everyone else says. We didn't have a league before that. Most people never didn't even know what the World Cup was. Bang, it was here.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. 94 was a big deal, no question about it, because we were the host nation. Older set is going to say the North American Soccer League was pretty big, and when Pelé came here, that was a big boost for the sport of soccer. It also is a little demeaning to everybody who, well, I don't know about demeaning, but I think he's forgetting the fact that there were a lot of people that played what was professional soccer from the 60s on here, 70s, 80s, 90s, and it never looked this good with the infrastructure, the money, everything else. He's from New Jersey. He knows about the Cosmos, Tim, I think. I don't know how much of it he knows. He certainly knows it existed and Pelé was there. But 94 was an incredible moment of awareness for the sport of soccer, no doubt about it. But, boy, don't discount what happened before then. Not right. I mean, it's a whole bunch of guys coaching in the front offices of pro teams, people on radio, TV, that didn't get into the game because there was a financial remuneration. They got into the game because they strictly loved the sport. I can tell you the most money I ever made coaching, and I'm not even ashamed to say this, I think I was around $30,000, maybe a little less if all the fees came in from the parents. Yeah, now there's people out there that are millionaires off of youth soccer. I don't have any problem with that. My focus and a lot of people's focus back then was, hey, how do we stay in the game and how do we contribute to it? So 94 is a catalyst. I guess that's fair to say, but boy, it sounds like you're forgetting what happened prior. So there were things that were going on prior. Here's Tim Howard on designated players.
Go get the biggest, baddest player, no matter what. And what we lost in that was fit. Because what ends up happening for you as fans and for me as an owner and also a fan, it's like, who's the next one? Oh, that one failed, no problem. Get rid of his contract, let's go get the next one. And so it's this constant continuum of trying to go get this great savior. That's not, your designated player should be the piece that puts you over the top. The team has to be built in a way that it competes, that it's talented, that it has a shape that you want it to look like as an ownership group and as a coaching staff. And that final little piece at the end, that should be your designated player. Your designated player is not going to overhaul your entire fortunes. It just won't.
So, I don't disagree with that totally, but I will say that your choices of designated players, I mean, he's saying one thing and then saying another. He first says, well, they're not going to put you over the top. And in the beginning of it, he said they do put you over the top, the DP. So designated players should be your best players on the team, and they should be players that at the end of the day, they win you games if they're strikers or attackers. They win you games you shouldn't win, right? They win you games you shouldn't win. And they should be the best player on the team. And they should be players that have an impact on others. If you really want the full money with a DP. I want everything from a DP. I want that guy to be a magnet off the field. I want him to be able to go into the public vein. I want him to be the guy who leads the team on the field. I want him to be the guy who makes people better. I want him to, if he's coming in at DP status, live up to it in all those aspects. I'm not settling for one out of three. Okay, you're going to say, oh, you're citing Thomas Muller. But Thomas Muller, this is a stroke of brilliance from Vancouver to get him. That franchise, they're nothing like Seattle or Portland. I'm sorry. They've existed. They're a part of Cascadia. But they're nothing like Portland or Seattle when it comes to, you know, winning history, relevancy in their market. It's a great old-time brand. This guy just spit-shined this, Thomas Muller, by coming in. And now it was a club that they were going to sell. They don't want to sell now because they got this live wire. We're at a point here. We have to do something like that, I think, maybe in Houston, if we're going to get relevancy. Getting to the playoffs are great, but if we're not building a fan base, we're not building a culture, we're not building an army, we're not making this bigger and better so that every kid that's running around Houston wants to look up to their heroes down at the stadium and come and watch them and then one day play out there. I think this is all missed. Okay. Do we have one more soundbite on knowing Houston? Yeah, let's try that one, Brian.
But also the belief that I have in this ownership group. I know this city well. I talked from the day I got here, like, I know so many players and friends who have been here who love this city and love this club. And, you know, to be able to be a part of that and be a part of the Orange, like, that was special to me. So, yeah, I obviously wanted to commit here. But, look, I think ultimately the soccer investment is real and it's pretty special. And it's only going to grow more and more after this World Cup, by the way.
honestly, this was not a very good run from Tim. Tap dancing, waffling, evasive. You know, I got a lot of friends here. I really know Houston. Now, that's, I mean, is that really what we wanted to hear? We wanted to hear what's being done to improve things. By the way, Tim was an owner at a USL team when he was with the Colorado Rapids. It didn't do well. And I don't think Tim had a lot to the day-to-day. I think he was almost put in a bad position, to be honest with you. I don't know what he's investing financially. He's not invested in the community yet because he doesn't know the community and he doesn't know the context. And what I think is, this is good for Tim Howard. I'm an owner. I'm coming down. I'm going to take some videos. It's good for my enterprise. I'm on NBC. Yeah, but that's not good for us. And I, granted, I mean, I know people want to get Tim's autograph, and you know, he was a great goalkeeper. But he's got to do more. And I don't want to hear about Everton. I want to hear about the Houston Dynamo and how we are going to fix it. Right? How are we going to fix it? This is a really cool song. I want fans in the stadium. I want relevancy. I want media. I want attendance. I want an exciting product. I want it all. What's the vision? What's the plan? Is it just every year we're trying to get in the playoffs and go on a run? We had a really good team in 2023. It was a great watch. But here we sit in 2025, and we didn't gain any ground. And we got a World Cup coming in 2026. All right. I'm here. Honestly, I feel a little bit defensive, like I'm defending the soccer community, like it needs to be defended a little bit, because I think we're tired of all these outsiders coming in and educating us while not getting results good enough. There are people that really are passionate about the soccer community, and they don't like it when people just come in and give us a word salad and a lot of verbiage, a lot of rhetoric. It's behind it. Man. Gotta own the moment. It's not a good moment. You gotta own the moment. There needs to be more transparency. What are we specifically going to do to change it? The president of the club needs to talk. Jessica O'Neill is the president on a daily basis. Why didn't she talk to the media? Why is Tim Howard? I would rather hear from Jessica. All right, we'll take a break.
Listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Glenn Davis Soc, at Soccer Matters GD. Also on Facebook and on YouTube. All right, if you're hungry, Houston, I got a spot for you. It's in the Museum District. It's 1802 Bins. You like sliders? Well, then you're going to love Slip Sliders. It's small in size, but big in taste. Slip Sliders is where gourmet meets grab and go. Slip Sliders, you can build your perfect lineup of chef-crafted mini burgers, crispy fried chicken sliders, seafood favorites like shrimp or salmon, my favorite, the Shrimp Shack, even veggie and falafel sliders for the plant-based favor lovers. Fries, onion rings, fried pickles. Yeah, they got the crunch down there. Hand-spun milkshakes and warm beignet bites, if that's what you want for that sweet finish. Located at 1802 Bins, right by Herman Park, Slip Slider is a perfect stop before you go to the museums or maybe you're going to the park or the zoo. But anytime you crave big flavor, you can hold it in one hand. It's Slip Sliders, 1802 Bins. We carry on with the best of Soccer Matters. Well, Peter, like all of us, we have those defining moments where we first learned about the World Cup and it became something big in our life when we were kids. Which was yours and when did it occur?
I think it was the 82 World Cup. I watched 78, a little bit of it, but the 82 World Cup was, and I don't know if you remember, there was a documentary created and it was called Golay. And Sean Connery did the narration of it. And honestly, I don't think there's a better documentary in soccer than that one. And even for that time period, you think about it, like the camera work that they were able to draw out of each game. Like when Tardelli scored his goal for Italy, and the passion that he shows after he scores, it just gives, I mean, even right now, I got goosebumps thinking about it. That World Cup really resonated with me as a kid.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? Last week, we've been doing a thing called Monday Night Football down here. We aired that film. It is an incredible film. And it's got a young Maradona in it from the beginning. And you're right, the camera work. I mean, Sean Connery's voice just... But yeah, spectacular 82. Had everything, including that... When Schumacher came running off his line and smashed into the French forward, Battiston. Anyway, that was a good one. So 82 for you. All right, 90 World Cup. It's a huge moment for U.S. soccer. It becomes now sort of a benchmark moment to get back to a World Cup. You're a part of that team. Maybe just some thoughts on first when you guys qualified, but then actually being over there. And this was a younger and experienced team. Let's face it, under Bob Ganser, that's what everybody knew because that's where we were at the time.
Yeah. The final game against TNT, against Trinidad Tobago, everybody talks about it. My memories of it are a couple. When we landed in the airport and we drove from the airport to the hotel, I mean, the streets were lined, and I'm talking 10 people deep were lined from the airport to the hotel with their fans in red and black. I mean, it was impressive. It was in some respects intimidating. On the TV that night, they came out and said that the game day was a holiday in the country, so only everybody's focus was on the game. At the game, when we lined up to go out onto the field, I remember looking into the eyes of their players and I could see the fear. It was too much pressure. The country put too much pressure on them as players because, you know, all they had to do was tie. It's all they had to do. But you could see on their faces that this was heavy. And for us, we had nothing to lose. The goal, I'll tell you, there's a guy on our team. I would even use Paul Caligiuri in this. There's not a guy on our team that thought that, first off, he was shooting from there, like he was going to shoot. And I don't know, you know, he'll tell you probably something different, but I don't think he expected that ball to be going in from where he shot from and then the situation itself. But we were destined to qualify for sure. And then you talk about us getting to the World Cup. We had a great experience, and that is when we were going through qualifying in our own country, almost every venue, almost every qualification game, other than some in St. Louis, and that's debatable, we were the away team. I mean, the our opponents usually had more fans from their country in at our games than ours, right? Than American fans. And when we were driving up for the game, it was our second game in the World Cup. It was USA against Italy. We were driving into Rome, driving up to the stadium. There was a street that we turned around, and the whole thing was people from the United States all dressed in red, white, and blue. We had never seen that before. And that was, boy, a moment that I'll never forget, because for us, that was, oh my gosh, we've never seen this before, something like that. And then I remember walking out into the stadium. You know how you, when you get to the stadium, you get there, you put your stuff down, you go out and you check the field. Nobody's there yet, right? Like nobody's at the stadium. You go out, check the field, see what kind of shoes you're going to wear, all that stuff. So we go out there, and this is hours before the game. And I would say there's roughly about 500 people somehow in the stadium. And I think what they did was they let certain people come in and set flags and, you know, put all the stuff around. They were already yelling, like they were chanting and stuff. I couldn't believe how loud it already was. And the stadium had 500 people in it. I mean, that stadium was packed, right? Once we came out. But what I did was I laid down right on the center circle, you know, facing upwards into the sky. And, you know, I can still see myself doing that. It was kind of like taking in that moment, and then walking out for the start of the game was just unbelievable.
Beautiful. I mean,
you're lucky, right? Because we're playing in Italy, and now we're playing Italy in Rome. You know, it's kind of like Gladiator. You know what I mean?
Host nation. Was that the best game out of the group stages? I mean, obviously, result-wise, you're playing the host country under incredible pressure. You had played Czechoslovakia, got beaten by them 5-1 to start it, and then you played Austria to end it. But was that the best game, I guess?
Probably from all perspectives, yes, it was. Tony Meola played out of his mind.
Yeah, he had a great game.
He really did. But at the end, I always say this. They won 1-0. It was by far our best game. There was a chance that I had. Bruce Murray had a free kick. Bruce and I would, you know, we trade off. And so on this one, I acted like I was a lefty. I would run over the ball, and I would go on the outside of the wall in case there was a rebound. And I would just keep running to the goal, and then Bruce hits. And we would trade it up every once in a while. So he's hitting this one. He won the debate that night, right? So I run over, he hits it, and Zenga makes a save to Zenga's right. And now I'm on the left. The ball's on a very tough angle. You know, there's not much goal to shoot at. So I figured, look, and it's amazing what goes through your mind. Like I'm thinking the whole time, like, I don't want to hit this over from this space. Like, I don't want to miss the goal. I at least need to get him to make a save. So I'm like, I'm going to keep it low. And I was really trying to go between his legs because, you know, a lot of goalkeepers, the way they plant, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Five balls is a good place to put it sometimes.
Right. So especially where they plant in those situations. And so I hit it. When I hit it, it goes through his legs, but it hits his ankle and it bounces and hits his ass and his rear end, whatever. And it bounces around. And one of the guys comes and clears it off the line as it trickles into the goal. Now, we didn't really deserve, at the end, I'm being honest, we didn't deserve to tie the game because they had a lot of chances and Tony stood on his head. He also missed a penalty. At the end, 1-0 result was respectful. Look, I want to win, but we didn't deserve to win. They did. And so, yeah, it was a great game by us. It was a great environment. Never forget it, but the result was fair.
What else jumped out to you about that World Cup? Anything? It didn't have to be U.S. related.
I mean, there's a lot of different things. Funny anecdote, I remember in that game. So, you know, when you're back then, it's not like it is today, right? I mean, you were organized and everything, but a lot of stuff was done by players, right? Like, you know that. I mean, a lot of decisions were made in game. You know, coaches got you ready, but, you know, you didn't have advanced scouting as much as you thought you did back then because there wasn't resources like you have today and all kinds of different companies that video games and do, you know, analysts and all that. So we're in game, and I remember like we're on a defensive corner kick, and you know, a bunch of us are there, and all the guys are coming up, and I'm like, I got Maldini, and then another guy's like, oh, I got Viali, right? And all of a sudden, they're looking at each other like, what? Like, who do we, you know, really, we have these guys? But because you got to remember, like, we're all a bunch of guys that, you know, weren't too long ago out of college.
Yeah.
Right? At that time on that team, I'm 99.9% sure I was the only player playing in Europe at that time. I was playing in Holland. Everybody else was playing full time for the U.S. team. So, you know, we're in a completely different world, but that was a funny one, thinking that, you know, you see these guys, and back then the Serie A was the biggest league in the world. It wasn't the EPL. So, yeah, that was an interesting one.
Peter Vermees joining us. A couple things on Peter. Obviously, on the 90 World Cup team, 67 caps, 11 goals for the U.S., if that's accurate, I found that. But we knew he played a lot for the U.S. national team. Also, one of the rare guys in Major League Soccer, because he's won the MLS Cup both as a player and as a coach, and, of course, spent 17 years at the top in Sporting Kansas City. And we're going to get to that in a minute. World Cup 2026. What comes to mind here, we're hosting it. It's a big opportunity to platform the game again. Just what are some of your initial thoughts to us being the host, one of the host countries, along with Canada and Mexico?
I think this is the best pool of talent that we've ever assembled. I think that when you have guys, as we do, playing in not only some of the top leagues, but top teams in the world, and playing in the best competitions, Champions League, Europa Cup, and then playing in their domestic competition that they are, it's one thing to have a player, you know, a national team player, U.S. national team player, playing or being on a good club team in a good league. It's another thing for having them perform. I mean, you just take Christian Pulisic. I mean, he. Again, I hear people talk about all kinds of things about him, right? I've heard it all. And I'm always surprised when I hear the negative things. Like when I hear people talk about, I've heard people say like, oh, well, you know, he's got to be this leader and this captain and this. No, he doesn't. It doesn't say anywhere just because you're a good player that you have to be this type of leader or leader. Sometimes your play just does it. Sometimes you're a leader without being a guy that goes and runs around and is, you know, yelling in everybody's face and all that stuff. I mean, I remember a great story from Vince Lombardi's book, and it was about the quarterback, Bart Starr, isn't that right?
Yeah, Bart Starr.
And you know, there was getting ready for a Super Bowl, and he's kind of standing leaning up against the doorway, and all these guys are talking, all the stuff is talking, and you know, even Vince Lombardi's giving his speech, and when he's kind of done, he walks out, and all the guys look to him kind of like, hey, you know, are you going to talk? Because he was kind of like he's quarterback, he's the guy, right? And he turns to everybody and says, talk is cheap, and he walks out into the field. Like, I can say all I want, right? Let's go out there and do it. And the guy did it. And right. So there's all kinds of leaders. I think Christian, what he does is personally, I think that he proves it on a regular basis, the way he plays. And I think what happens is it's probably the evolution of our game in our country, because it's not just the game. It's the evolution of having a professional league that's been around for 30 years. You have players that have exited the game. You have players that have played at a high level, notoriety, and now they have opinions and they say stuff. All of it's good for the game. But I would say that when the World Cup comes, the thing that has to happen is we have to rally behind our team. We got to stop all this negative stuff in and around the national team and what's going to happen. Because even with Pochettino, only thing that counts is what he does in the World Cup. That's why he was brought in. So leave that alone. and support the team and get behind it, because when that, you know, the 12th man is everything. It's everything. If you get the country, it's one thing you get your, you know, your city behind you. Imagine getting your country behind you. That could really change things. And I think this is an opportunity for us to step off of what happened in 94, which resulted in MLS and other things, the women's game and all these different things that have happened. I think this is now the opportunity to go to whatever you want to call it. You know, is it 2.0? Is it 4.0? I don't know. Whatever 0.0 it is.
Bar.
It's the next evolution, and we got to take advantage of that. But I really think that the results are important. I think the U.S. team's going to do well, personally. I do. But I also think that we have to support them and understand that, you know, it's a process getting there. Just look at Argentina in the last World Cup. What happened to them in the first game, right? Things can always happen. You gotta, you know, keep the focus, stay aligned.
By the way, I think people forget that, because Mexico considers Argentina their best rival, was their second game. They had to win that game pretty much.
Yeah.
That was a very tricky situation. That's good that you brought that up. We're talking to Peter Vermees. Some of the negativity, though, isn't some of that due to technology and guys on podcasts and trying to build their numbers and all that stuff?
Well, I would say 100%, but unfortunately, that's what gets the play.
Yeah.
And what I want to make sure is that the country understands that, like, don't buy into the negativity. Stay with the positivity, because, again, that's what's going to push the team forward. And that's what's going to create an unbelievable experience for this World Cup in our country.
All right, let's take a break. Before we go to break, though, shout out for a couple of great sponsors of this show. Let's start with Lone Star Sports and Entertainment, LSSE.net, our great friends over there. That is where the World Cup is going to be held. 7 matches at the amazing Energy Stadium, 5 group stage matches, 2 that will be knockout stage, round of 32 and round of 16. A big thank you for the support of LSSE.net, Lone Star Sports and Entertainment. Also, I-10 and the Marquee Entertainment Center, Hugh O'Connor's. Get over to Hugh O'Connor's in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Great whiskey offerings, great beer offerings, all the great pub food you've been known for over there at Hugh O'Connor's. Liverpool Supporters Group is over there. Again, it's a great spot to go to over the holidays. It is Hugh O'Connor's Pub. I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center.
Loaded, ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, as always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. Look, nobody wants to get in any kind of an accident. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, maybe you drive an 18-wheeler, construction, you need the best. The best is John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW, DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm are going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends, to get you the compensation that you deserve. And by the way, they've been getting soccer on the airwaves here for so many years as our anchor sponsor of Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Let's continue on with the soccer talk. Now, our next guest, he is the co-founder and chairman of Athletic Club Boise in USL1, but you'll know him from his ties to Houston, Texas. He is Steve Patterson. He joins us now. Steve, how are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. Glad to be with you.
Excited to have you on. I never knew I'd be talking soccer with you, but this is an awesome thing after being the athletic director at UT and being involved with the Rockets. I never thought I'd be talking soccer with you. What brought you to soccer?
You know, actually, I've had the opportunity to work in most professional sports in North America. My partner, Brad Stith, who's one of the other co-founders, along with a number of local folks from Boise, have been looking at that market for about 15 years. And we thought we were going to put a G League team there, and that didn't happen. And we looked at buying the hockey team and couldn't quite pull that together. We thought we had the baseball team bought, got outbid for that. And finally, the county, which owns the fairgrounds up there and a considerable convention space there, they had a former horse race track that they hadn't been able to bring back for horse racing. And we got to talking to him about turning it into a soccer stadium for a USL team. And over the course of a couple of years of negotiation, Brad and I got the county to agree to work with us on developing what was the horse track into a soccer stadium. And so we're under construction now. And come March, April, we'll be playing soccer there.
Steve Patterson, Athletic Club Boise in the USL. So the city's got a unique tie to the Basque region in Spain, Athletic Bilbao. Take us into that a little bit. I find this incredibly interesting, and it goes back to the 1800s and immigrants.
It really does. It's interesting. A lot of folks historically were shepherds, sheep herders in Spain, came to that part of Idaho in the 1800s, settled there, and it's the largest Basque population outside of the Basque region in Spain in the world. And so very ingrained politically in the community, in the business community. And if you go downtown, it's a great downtown in Boise. There's a whole area with a lot of Basque restaurants and bars, and you'll see them with the Bilbao flags on the days when soccer's on the TV in the bars and people are watching it. And so it's a great little cultural wrinkle in that community in Idaho.
Very interesting. I'm sure there's some great food as well.
Yep.
All right. You kind of told us about the vision to bring it here now. So you get into Boise, you get the franchise, you get things aligned now. Now, you guys are kicking off in March, and I do want to remind listeners, they also will have a women's team in the USL Super League as well, which is just below the NWSL. So what's biggest on your plate now moving towards the March opener?
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time developing the business community. We've had a great response in that marketplace. We set a league record for the number of season ticket deposits. It's over 7,000. We started working through that list. We're at 4,000 or 5,000 season tickets. Full season tickets sold. We haven't even started selling half seasons or mini seasons yet. So great response in the community. We've got a lot of sponsors lined up in terms of our jersey, which will be San Alfonsos, the local hospital group. We just signed a big deal with the Ford dealers. We're getting close in the beer category and a number of other categories. So, you know, it's really key if you're going to have a successful sports franchise, you have to be embraced by the local business community. And we've been really excited about that. The building's under construction, as I said. We just started laying the turf last week. Seats have started going in. We'll have one of the largest numbers of premium seats in either the USL for both the championship division and the second division. You know, our average ticket price would be amongst the highest in the two leagues combined. We'll probably finish somewhere in the top 2, 3, 4 league in revenues based on what we have committed already this year. So there's a lot of enthusiasm for soccer. We're going to have a second phase, which we've just decided to accelerate and put into the first phase, which is a lot of the practice fields and fields that people could use for soccer development in the community that'll go into the Ada County development. The parks that are getting built around it make for a pretty dramatic change in that area. The county's undertaken to really build a beautiful park system that connects into hike and bike trails and has all kinds of workout facilities. So it's a great athletic complex now that's going to be a great amenity for the Boise community. And it'll allow us really to have more regional soccer tournaments. There currently aren't any soccer fields that are lighted, so we can't play at night. There are soccer fields that are unlighted in the community. We'll have lights on ours so you can play at night. So it just gives us a chance to grow youth and adult soccer throughout the whole state.
Now, I know Boise State has an NCAA women's team. I'm sure you're going to try to tap in and connect with them. How strong is the youth community there? Because obviously youth is king, and you know, you're hoping someday a kid that's playing youth soccer is going to end up on the Athletic Club Boise.
Well, we're not allowed yet to announce signings, but we're looking forward to having you know, some local players that have a history in the marketplace play with us there. And, you know, we do want to be able to develop via the academy and the local folks that have already had leagues operating there to grow those. As I said, having the ability to have games at night gives you much more time for folks, which is, you know, as you well know, always a problem, right? How can you find enough hours on the grass, much like it is in hockey, getting enough ice time is a struggle often. And so because we'll be able to expand the time of day people can play, we expect to see considerable growth up there. But there's a history of soccer up there in committee. Bill Taylor is one of our founders and partners in the things, had a long time working with USA Soccer. And so we're excited about building those kind of relationships with Boise State, some of the other colleges up there that have soccer. We're excited about.
Steve Patterson joining us, the co-founder of Athletic Club Boise, USL1. They're in Boise, Idaho, which is a pretty amazing, beautiful part of the country. Going back to the college, are you going to try to tap in along with the connection to the Bass community? Are you going to try to tap into, you know, obviously the college crowd at Boise State?
I think so. You know, our first blush of focus has been on those people that expressed interest in tickets, those people that are registered and in the USA Soccer system playing in that marketplace, the business community there. But even though we're largely sold out of the fixed seats, we still have seats available in the premium seating. We're going to hold several hundred seats a game that will sell day game only. It'll be walk-up seats so people can come and, you know, families and students and other folks that want to decide day of the game to come to the game. We're going to hold those seats so that we'll always have a few available for people to come to the games on the spur of the moment, because we think it's important to grow those sort of tertiary fans that, hey, it's Saturday night, let's try something new. We'll go see the soccer team play.
Opening match again for Athletic Club Boise, USL1 will be in March, and that's coming pretty quick. So it's a World Cup year, obviously, you know that. I mean, can you leverage the World Cup with Boise?
I think we can. You know, part of what we've looked at doing is events all during the World Cup competition in the stadium and in our club areas. We have a premium club space that was the old turf club that was pre-existing from when there were races going on there. So, you know, if you've ever been in a turf club at a horse track, you got lots of TVs and lots of technology to get feeds from all over the country in there in a comfortable environment. And so, yeah, we're planning on doing those kind of events all during the World Cup competition this summer. So it's a chance for people to build community around soccer beyond just the games that AC Boise's playing in that marketplace. And we think that's an important element to really grow the game of soccer. We saw it in previous World Cups, obviously, in the U.S. and in previous Olympics in the U.S., so we think it'll be a good burst of energy for soccer in all of North America, given that we're playing in Mexico, we're playing in Canada, we're playing in the U.S.
Yeah, no,
hopefully be playing some in NRG Stadium down
we
there.
We got
too.
Seven of them down here that we're waiting for the mass migration. We're hoping the Netherlands or Germany or, you know, somebody with a crazy cool fan base, Brazil comes in. Everybody's excited about the December 5th draw for sure. You know, I was just sitting here thinking, and I'm probably sure you've already done this, have you guys reached out to find some collaboration with Athletic Bilbao in Spain?
There have been some conversations. I haven't been a part of that, but on the soccer side. And, you know, we think that could be a lot of fun for us. Now, in the past, Bilbao has played games in, you know, friendlies in Boise. And so we'd like to replicate that again. there's a large celebration of the Basque culture and community that happens every about 4 or 5 years in Boise. And so when that comes back up again in a few years, we're thinking we'd like to have them come and play, and particularly now that we've got a stadium that's a soccer-specific stadium.
I'm just curious, like here in Houston, we have so many different groups from all over the world, and they're all groups you can kind of cater to a little bit culturally to bring them in. Are there things culturally you can do with the connection to Basque at games that, you know, connect maybe a little bit more with that fan base in Boise?
Yeah, we've been quite upfront about that. If you look at the lettering in the crest of the logo that we use, I mean, that lettering for AC Boise is sort of Basque related lettering. We try to replicate in the mountains and the fields of grain and whatnot in that logo that represent folks who've come and historically to Boise, be they shepherds, be they growers. It's where they grow all the potatoes for McDonald's. A couple of our partners are involved in that business, and so yeah, we've got one of the people on our advisory board works a lot with the city. She's a Basque. The city council and mayor's folks are engaged there. So, and we've held a number of events downtown in the Basque area where all the restaurants and bars are. So, yeah, we intend to leverage that in the marketplace.
Now, I'm sure, and I'm interested to hear your answer to this because of your history in sports and your expertise. Comparing the MLS model, where it's more of a centralized league, to USL, speak to me a little bit about that and just your thoughts on it, because you've seen MLS grow in stature and the infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of those guys that have led that league, the MLS, for years, and I think they've done a great job growing the game. You know, we're excited about our structure. There's a lot of discussion about relegation and promotion in USL. I want to see how that finally comes out in terms of what all the eventual details of that are. But that's something that people in the soccer industry from the world are used to. It's something that's sort of new in the United States in terms of how leagues work together for relegation and promotion. And, you know, we're talking a lot about that in this league. I just think more soccer, more teams, more kids engaged, you know, more sponsors engaged, more people coming to games, you know, whether it can be in Portland, Maine, or Houston or Atlanta or New York or wherever, more soccer specific stadiums, you know, get some beautiful ones in our league. You go to Louisville or you go to like Sacramento, they're building, Pittsburgh's adding on, Cleveland's going to come online with a stadium, you know, so all these sort of efforts at building facilities, building the academies to go with the teams to grow the game, just make for a great opportunity for people to learn the game, grow the game, and enjoy the game all over the United States.
Well, Steve, fascinating. I really thank you for coming on. I know a lot of Houstonians will hear this and they'll get some good memories of the Rockets and many, many other things. So thanks so much for coming on. Wishing you all the best of luck with this. It's really, really interesting. Love this Basque connection. Makes it really unique in a lot of ways.
Yep. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're excited about it. Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you very much. Quick reminder for two of our great sponsors. Slip Sliders down in the Museum District. It's 1802 Bins. Whatever protein you want, they've got it. Beef, chicken, fish, and seafood. They've even got Slip Sliders down there that are for those that are plant-based. So you can get veggie and falafel sliders as well. Slip Sliders is at 1802 Bins. So if you're going to the museum, you're going to the park, you're going to the zoo, as many people are going to be doing over the holidays, it is a great spot to go. 1802 Bins Street, right by Herman Park. Slip Sliders, the perfect stop before or after your museum day. Senate Avenue Brewing, 16,000 Dillard in Jersey Village. This is going to be a hot spot for World Cup watching. when we get into June and our seven games here in Houston that are going to be over at Energy Stadium. It is a hometown brew pub. That's what I like about it. It's got that sort of German beer garden feel. Every age group there. You got kids out on the patio running around. You got dogs. It's family. It's everything. It's soccer fans. And they've got some of the best in beer. And I mean craft beer. Every batch handcrafted in small quantities. Award-winning stouts, crisp IPAs, to refreshing seltzers and wines for the non-beer crowd. There's always something new on tap and always something worth talking about. Got great food as well. Scratch-made burgers, wings, pizza, tacos, appetizers. We will be out there in January with our live Soccer Matters show. Bring the crew. It's a patio-friendly, dog-friendly, family-friendly, great, great spot to go. It's Senate Avenue Brewing, 16,000 Dillard in Jersey Village. And by the way, mark it down. If you're in that part of town, that's where you're going to want to watch World Cup matches this coming summer. All right, that does it tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. You can catch the podcast at ESPN975.com, also Spotify and Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. For Brian McDonald, good night, everyone.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.